Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. It is a great pleasure to say we are joined once again by Ambassador Yoram Ettinger of Israel, a man I've admired greatly and considered a very close personal friend for a long time, and whose work both in his government and on its behalf since leaving office, and for that matter, his work on behalf of the free world more generally, is incalculably important. He formerly served as a minister for congressional affairs with the rank of ambassador in the Israeli embassy in this country, also its consul general to the southwestern parts of the United States. He is the author of a terrific product known as the Jerusalem Cloakroom, so it is ever a delight to have him with us. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
I was struck by something that was reported just today, I believe, in one of the Israeli papers in which the outgoing chief of staff of the Israeli Air Force commented publicly, apparently for the first time, that there have been something like 100 strikes by Israel against convoys that the Syrians or their Hezbollah allies have been using to try to move weapons around in a way that Israel obviously found threatening. It kind of puts into sharp relief how dangerous the situation is in Israel for Israel in Syria at the moment. Would you talk a little bit about how you see the lay of the land in that regard?
Well, absolutely. It seems to me that the threat is to the region as a whole. The threat is to vital American national security, as well as, but not primarily, Israel's national security. We're talking about basically Iranian military effort, Iranian political effort to expand influence of the rogue Ayatollahs from Tehran, from Iran through Iraq into Syria and increasingly into Lebanon, which would provide the Ayatollahs a presence, strategic presence, in the eastern Mediterranean, which is, in a way, the turf of the American Sixth Fleet. Well, my concern is that the U.S. government may be preoccupied with the surgical confrontation with ISIS in Syria without realizing that decimating ISIS alone, without clipping the wings of the Ayatollahs in Iran, would be a dramatic American tailwind to the strategic goal of the Ayatollahs, as, by the way, it was in Iraq when the U.S., in my mind, rightly so, toppled the regime of Saddam Hussein, but did not pursue it all the way to also subdue the Ayatollahs of Iran, and therefore the toppling of Saddam served dramatically the ambitions of the Ayatollahs, just like the current battle against ISIS serves the interest of the Iranian Ayatollahs, unless the U.S. realizes the major enemy has to be with the rogue Ayatollahs and not with what relative tumbleweeds in the Middle East.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Ambassador. Well said, as always. Let me turn to another problem that I believe both we and the Israelis are confronting, namely the character and conduct of the Palestinian Authority, the so-called government of the Palestinian community. And we've not spoken in a while, and I wanted to get your read on the ongoing controversy about what role the Palestinian Authority government of Mahmoud Abbas is playing in fomenting terrorism, jihadism, attacks on Israelis, some of them murderous, notably on the Temple Mount, and what the government of Israel has been doing to contend with that.
Well, it's worthwhile noting that the Palestinian Authority has complained about their relative passivity of Arab leaders during the Temple Mount controversy. And the question is, why would Arab leaders be relatively passive during such confrontation rather than support wholeheartedly the Palestinian battle against Israel? And the response, in my mind, is not to be found in the Arab talk, but rather in the Arab walk. When it comes to the Arab walk, they remember that in 1951, King Abdullah, the great-grandfather of the current King Abdullah, was murdered by a Palestinian. The Jordanians remember that in 1970 there was a civil war against the Palestinians. They remember that in the mid and late 1980s there were violent clashes with the Palestinians, and the Hashemites in Jordan assume that should there be a Palestinian state west of the river, it would doom the Hashemite, the pro-U.S. Hashemite regime east of the river. The U.S. government, as well as the Western establishment at large, tend to focus on the Palestinian and the Arab talk rather than on their walk. And when it comes to what in my mind is the most important Palestinian walk, we have to pay attention to what they have been doing since the Palestinian Authority was established in 1993 until today, fomenting hate education system K-12, incitement and worshipping of Palestinian terrorists in Palestinian social communal activities throughout the Palestinian Authority. The Palestinian Authority under Mahmoud Abbas has become a most productive production line of terrorists. And as anyone knows, the Middle East works in a ripple effect principle.
Let me just ask you very quickly. We're almost out of time, Mr. Ambassador. And I do want to emphasize the importance of the point you just made, especially that we in the United States are with our taxpayer dollars helping to underwrite some of this activity on the part of the Palestinian Authority against Israel's interests as well as our own, to the extent that this has been part of a policy approach of the United States government. It seems to be one that H.R. McMaster, the president's national security advisor, has been quite content to perpetuate. People both on that side of the pond and this, who I respect most, notably Carolyn Glick and Mort Klein of the Zionist Organization of America, have been objecting rather strenuously to H.R. McMaster's policy approach towards Israel. What are your views on that subject, Ambassador Edinger?
Well, the issue is really not General McMaster's views on Israel, just as it's not the State Department's views on Israel. The question is the world view in general and the impact on vital American national security interests. For General McMaster or Secretary Tillerson or the top bureaucracy of the U.S. State Department to provide tailwind to the Palestinian Authority while ignoring the fact that the total financial assistance by the U.S. to the Palestinian Authority exceeds that which all Arab oil-producing countries provide the Palestinian Authority, that leads to a very, very erroneous step. Why don't the Arab countries provide the PLO sufficient financial assistance? Why do they flood the Palestinians with talk but refrain from walk, not military walk and not financial or political walk? Because the Arabs do consider the Palestinian Authority to be a major subversive terrorist potential in the Middle East, as has been proven by the Palestinian track record going back to the collaboration with the Nazis on.
Yeah. Mr. Messer, we have to leave it at that. At the moment, we are hard out of time. Thank you so much for your time today, as well as for the terrific work that you do, both over there and over here. I know you'll keep it up, and I look forward to talking with you again in the very near future. John Rossomondo of the Investigative Project on Terrorism will join us. We'll talk a little bit more about Middle Eastern affairs, specifically, should the United States government embrace the Muslim Brotherhood again?
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.